Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh on this Rosh Chodesh Tammuz daf Shin Pei is daf Kuf Tet, and we got up to I think the top line, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Yad Misame. That's where we're up to. Yes, indeed. So we're continuing on now with the question of what is the impact of touching various parts of the body before washing the hands three times in the morning. And in order to explain why you have to be careful, we said you can't touch your mouth, your ears, your nose, your eyes, your body orifices. Why not? Because a yad, it can be misame. A hand can cause blindness if it touches the eyes. A hand can cause a death if it touches the ear. A hand can create a polypus if it touches the mouth or if it touches the nose. There's some type of boil or pus. Tanya, Rabbi Natan Omer, you should know that whatever this is, it's a bat chorin. This is the name of this particular ruach ra is bat melech. And this bat melech is very hoity-toity. So she does not leave unless she's treated properly. Umakpedet, achi yerchutz yadav shalosh ba'amim. You want to get rid of me, you're going to have to treat me nicely. So you have to wash your hands three times alternatively on the different hands. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, if your eyes have been damaged by Bat Melech, you can use Puch. Exactly what Puch is, I don't know, but talks about it in Tanakh even. And it's what they used to use for coloring the area around the eyes and on the face. And that Puch, there's a type of mascara, I guess, can help the damages to the eye that were caused by touching without washing your hands by the ruach ra called bat melech. Not only that, it also will stop tearing, and it's marba sear ba'af apayim. It also grows your eyelashes, so you do not have to buy artificial eyelashes anymore. You see, if you've got yourself some puch. Tani nami achi Rabbi Yosi mer puch ma'avir bat melech b'seket adima u'marba sear ba'af apayim. Yomar maruk va'omer Shmuel. You should know that Alin in Behem Mishum Refuah. Now Rashi learns that Alin is a type of plant. But Tosis brings that Alin means leaves that you put on your eyes. Nothing to do with a medication that you eat. You put on your eyes. You should know that the leaves of different plants do not have healing effect on eye problems. I don't know, what about the tea bags that everybody uses? You see, in our terms, we still do the same things, you know. So according to the Rabbeinu Chananel, you wouldn't be able to put that on your eye, or it wouldn't help to put it on your eye, because it wouldn't work. But they still say it works on styes anyway, right? Omer of Yosef, that's because it has tannic acid, not the leaf per se, anyway. Omer of Yosef, kuzbarta emba mishum refua. Kuzbarta is usually translated as coriander. And Omer of Sheshes, kashut. Now, we said yesterday, when we talked about kashrut, it's a little bit confusing because kashrut are what's used in beer, which should be hops. But hops are a kind of plant, and the Gemara yesterday identified it as a kind of fungus. So I don't know. I don't know what to say. I mean, I know it's taken for granted that kuzbarta means hops. By the way, the hops. Kuzbarta, by the way, Rashi learns, is actually oleander. And that would explain why it would not be a very good idea, because oleander is a deadly poison. But that's how he translates oleander, which would make sense in the Gemara, because actually what Rav Yosef, who was blind, said, is that, let me tell you something, even me who's blind, putting any of that stuff on my eye gives me a lot of pain. So just be careful if your eyes are working. And Rav Sheshes, who was also blind, says, Gargira, fila di didi mali, that this Gargira is what they call today, you know, the now that it's become very popular again, is the rocket lettuce type of thing, greens. So that is useful even for me, because it just makes my eyes feel better. The Omar Maruk Vamashmuel, kol mine kashut sharu, any type of hops. Again, I'm not ready 100% to commit myself to that because of yesterday's Gemara, but that's because even healthy people will eat hops. Remember we said that anything that could be eaten by regular people who are not having any kind of problems would be completely mutter, because it's not nicker that you're doing it for a refuah. Levar mi teruza. The only thing that wouldn't is this teruza, which normal people don't eat, and therefore if you're eating it, you're eating it clearly only because you need it as a medication. Omer chista, sharika tavya shori, pipui bei osir. Now, Rashi learns, and according to which it's going to be completely irrelevant to anything that we learned before, and therefore very difficult to explain what the heck it would be doing here, that it means literally, sharika tavya would mean to be putting a coating of egg or oil on a roast. A basting, what do they call it? Basting, right? Basting. And pipue bei and whipping up eggs is usher because it looks like you're going to be using it for putting into some type of a cooking need. Which Tosfos Tain is, this is a little crazy. Why would we be mentioning something that has to do with the dinim of bishul in the Gemara over here? So Tosfos learns that this is just a word that's used. Sharika tavya doesn't, even though literally it translates to basting. It's actually what you do is you take watermelon or type of melons and you need to put them through a filter in order to be able to get the juice out of it, which is then a good medication. And that's mutter because that is drinkable anyway. And we say that anything that you could have had anyway is okay. And like it's like putting water through your water filter, which is mutter. And mashenken pipuei also is a type of nothing to do with really pipuei bei, and therefore it belongs here. Okay, who knows? I can't identify anyway the names of the things in English, so it's not going to do much good to translate it. Devita de Ziri Avdalei L'chia Barashi. Now, Chia Barashi was a Talmud of Ziri. So she made this for him, either according to Tosfos, the watermelon juice, or according to Rashi, she did a basted roast, and he refused to eat it on Shabbos. So she said to him, you know, this is the way it goes nowadays. Everybody's frummer than the others. For your Rebbe, it's good enough. You know, I can make it for him, and he eats it fine. But for you, I mean, you're such a big tzaddik, you wouldn't eat it. At lo achot. And this is actually Ziri going l'shitato, because Ziri said that a person can be notena dam yayin tzalulu mayim tzalulim l'tocha mishameret ve'eno choshesh. So I'm not giving the mishtati hachi la mihikavik. Why does Ziri say it's mutter? Because he says that since the halacha is that you're allowed to take something that is clear and drinkable anyway and pass it through a filter, and there's no iser in that of borer, so you see that since something can be taken by most people straight out the way it is, plenty of people will drink water right out of the faucet. So because of that, it's not considered to be doing anything that has chashivas to put it through a water filter. The same thing is true over here. Hachinami, again, if it's referring to Rashi's approach, that's literally putting some type of egg coating on a roast, obviously it would have to be that the roast isn't hot enough to be considered the equivalent of a kli risha. Remember, we spoke before about a dover gush is considered to retain its heat even if it's in whatever kli. So it would have to be talking about that it's not hot enough to cook. According to Tosfos, it means that this watermelon juice is something that is certainly drinkable the way it is, and because of that, love me to cover it, you're not doing anything wrong, and therefore, I'm not getting. Can you guys hear me okay? Because I am not getting any. Shoot. Not getting any sound in the recorder over here now. Okay.
It sounds normal.
Sounds normal. Okay. Somehow or other here, it's not normal in this recorder. So, all right. We won't worry about that. Yoma Marukva. Misha Nakfa Yado Oraglo. Somebody who's got, who hit his, the top of the back of his hand or the top of his foot, and he's got some bleeding there. He is allowed to be tzomta b'yayin ve'ino choshesh. He can use wine to close up the wound, and it's not a problem. Iboilu, what about using vinegar? Omer avila l'ravashi kavina be'rav kahana. When I was learning by Rav Kahana, he said, no, vinegar already is something that's very strong, and you wouldn't use that for a cut on Shabbos. Omar Rava, Hani Mili, these Hani B'nai B'chuzah people, remember Rava always had nice things to say about the people in Beverly Hills, which is where he lived. So he says, Hani B'nai B'chuzah, the people around here are so spoiled that they become, their skin is so sensitive, you know. You wouldn't allow their dear sweet skins outside in the sun without a 50 SPV covering now, would you? So these are the kind of people that even chamra nami masu, a little bit of wine, you know, oh, put wine on the skin, and that's also a little bit too much. Forget about hydrogen peroxide. Ravina iglalave Ravashi, and he sees that Ravashi is really suffering because a donkey had stepped on Ravashi's foot from the top and had cut it, and he was sitting there with his foot in vinegar. Omar Lai, so Ravina said to Ravashi, remember that Rav Hillel told when Ravashi asked him that when he was learning by Rav Kahana, they said, you're not allowed to use vinegar. Omar Lai, by the way, this is a very important halacha lemaisa that is learned from this Gemara, that Ravashi said to him, a sore or a type of wound, or a penetrating wound, which is on the back of the hand or on the back of the foot, in other words, the upper part of the foot, is considered to be dangerous enough to actually be mechalel Shabbos. It's considered to be a sakana because it could affect the arteries, and therefore it has to be treated with whatever you could treat it with. Ikari Amre, others say that Ravina saw that Ravashi was using wine on this serious wound. So he said to Ravashi, why are you using wine? Didn't Rava say that people here in Beverly Hills, they're so sensitive that they are not even allowed to be using wine because wine has an immediate effect on the skin? And I'm sorry to say it, but Rebbe is pretty darn spoiled. I mean, you're pretty sensitive yourself, you know, and maybe you should treat yourself l'chumra as if you live in Beverly Hills. So Amar Lehi said, yeah, but that's okay, because Gavayad v'Gavaregel Shaini, Yom Rav Arba Masna, Amar Rav, Gavayad v'Gavaregel are considered to be like a makah shel chalal. And that's the chalal, that any internal injury is considered to be a possible sakonis nefoshis, ultimately needs to be dealt with immediately, because internal infections can cause blood poisoning and so on. If you don't deal with them right away, you are dealing with the sakonis nefoshis. And therefore, this is considered to be the equivalent of an internal injury, and mechalena aleihem et haShabbat. That's why I am using wine, even though, yes, it's quite true that I am very sensitive. Tana Rabbana, rochatzim b'megrar, you're allowed to wash on Shabbos in Megrar. Now, what exactly is the issue of Megrar? Grar is a location, we know that, where Avram was and so on, but the question is, what's the issue over there? Rashi learns that the issue is that they were mineral waters. And Tosis learns that the issue is that they were hot springs. So in any event, the question is, people would go there for medical treatment. So in Chamtan, which is near Tveria, and in Me'asia, and in Me'Tveria itself, you can go into all of these places on Shabbos because these are things that regular people would do. And remember that we said all of the issues did not concern us to washing. It was only concerned for going swimming because of the problem of Shema Yitakein, Klishayet, and so on. But you're certainly allowed to wash on Shabbat. The problem was washing in hot water, that we said if it's natural springs, that they took away the gezerah unless it's inside of a ma'ara. We're over there, we're choshish that maybe you'll go in there for a shvitz. Okay, just to remind you of the sugya we had before. And so all of these things you could do on Shabbos, but even if you're doing it for a refuah, because again, the general rule is that when it comes to refuah, things that regular people would do is not considered to be mukha milta mishum refuah. It's not clear that that's why you're doing it, and therefore there's no gezeira about the problems of maybe you'll end up making medication. However, say the Rabbanan over here, you cannot go into the ocean on Shabbos because the ocean is salty. And you cannot go in, we're going to ask on this in a moment, because it doesn't really make sense, And you cannot go into the water that was used, remember, for soaking the linen, the flax, below the Yam HaShel Sodom, and you cannot go into the Dead Sea. Because those are things that people will not do unless they're doing it for refuah. Is that true? There's a Beferish HaBraita that says, this Braita says you certainly can go and wash in the ocean. It's true that you wouldn't want to go into Yam HaShel Sodom unless you're doing it for refuah. Very, very salty. And it's true you wouldn't go into that smelly water that was used for soaking flax. But we have over here Akasha Yam HaGadol Yam HaGadol. Is the ocean good or not? Om Reb Yochanan, it's fascinating, but there's a machlokes about what the din is legabe the ocean. It's a completely different sugya. And Tosfos wonders, like, why the Gemara thinks that these things are interrelated. But in any event, we answer it by saying that there's two shitas. One is going alibi Rabbi Meir, and one is going alibi Rabbi Yehuda. What does this have to do? It has to do with the question of the Mishnah, Mikvaot. We're over there. It says, Kol HaYamim K'mikvah. By the way, the same Mishnah appears in Masechet Parah because it's Nogeya, what is considered to be Mayim Chayim. So what would be kosher for using, for mixing with Mei Parah, which is Nogeya here, this week's Parasha. By Chutzlar, it's next week's Parasha. But anyway, so according to the Rebbe Meir, as we'll see, is the Tanakhama here, since it says that the Lamikveh Mayim Kara Yamim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu called the great gathering of waters, he called them the Yamim. Now note that Yamim is plural. So apparently all of the bodies of water are called mikvahs. So says Rabbi Meir. And that would give them a din of a mikvah. If it gives them a din of a mikvah, then there's all kinds of special halachas that are nogeya mikvah. First of all, a mikvah is not mayim chayim. And secondly, a mikvah, Doc, you want to mute yourself? Secondly, a mikvah will not be mitaher if the water is moving. And that would mean that a yam is not mitaher if the water is moving. Yossi, will you please mute yourself? And so that would mean that you wouldn't be able to actually go into a yam if the yam is moving in any way. By the way, speaking of which, there is a new ruling that starts, I think, quite soon in Zoom. I got to figure out how to get around it, but Zoom is now going to be insisting that there's a passcode to get into meetings, which is a bit of a kvetch. So I would have to send everybody out a passcode. Well, I mean, it would be the same passcode for all of the Daf Yomi, but there appears to be a way around it. I'm looking into it. Maybe Ira would be able to figure out what to do, because we certainly don't. If you don't have the passcode, then you have to go through that meeting room thing where you have to wait in a waiting room.
But you can disable the waiting room.
Now you can, not in the future. They're changing. I'm telling you that they're changing it, and you're telling me what is. So the question is what we could do.
The link will automatically include the password. It's just a different link that if you have, it will automatically enter in the password. That's the way it works.
Again, that's now. That's not what's coming. Okay, in any event, and what it says over there is that would mean that you basically wouldn't be able to go and be tovel in the yam, in any of the yamim. According to Rashi, it would mean only if the water is actually moving, not the way others explain that there are waves, because waves is not movement. So it's just going up and down. But if the water is actually moving, so let's say that you had a high tide, you know, and now the water is running out of the tide pool. So then it would be moving, and moving water is not kosher for tefillah. Fine. Certainly couldn't use it for tefillah of Zovim. You wouldn't be able to use it for the Tyrus Abitzera, for the Tzipor, which has to be Mayim Chayim. You wouldn't be allowed to use it for the Paraduma. And that is a reference to any kind, even freshwater lakes. So tight is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. It's only the ocean that is considered to be the mikveh hamayim, and that's what it's referring to in Maisa Bereishis. So as far as your diak is concerned, so why does it use the plural? Why does it say yamim? Yamim is only because yesh bo minei yamim harbe. There are so many different characteristics of the different oceans that are local even though there's only one body of water that surrounds all of the continents of the entire planet. And that's because Enodome Yam Sha'ola Ba'ako, Dag Sha'ola Ba'ako, Dag Sha'ola Ba'aspami, as they say. So in other words, the local conditions of oceans and the waters that are emptying into that oceans and climate issues and things like that will definitely change the characteristics of the water. And you don't feel the same if you're in the Mediterranean and you're in the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic Ocean and so on. But all oceans, because they're interconnected, are called yamim, but that's a reference to the planetary ocean. Masha Enkein, inland seas are not included. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, it's a mistake to think that the din of mikveh would apply to the oceans. Kol hayamim metaharim bezochalim, any kind of sea, inland, ocean, makes no difference. They will be metaher even though they're moving. Because, as Tosfos says, it doesn't make sense to say that the Torah was referring to the technical term mikveh when the standard situation of the ocean is that it's constantly in movement. And it would, why would the Torah view that as being a classic mikveh that you'd have to, what, put in tiles around it? That's, it doesn't make sense. But it's psul in lezavino lemitzorayin. It's certainly not as considered to be mayim chayim. Therefore, you can't use it for zav, you can't use it for tzaras, and you can't use it for the chatas, mechatas of the parah aduma. Anyway, so what this would be saying is that somehow or other, what we're saying is that there is a difference between the yam hagadol and other yamim. So because of that, Rabbi Meir, who holds that it's the same, all yamim are the same, he would say, look, if you're allowed to go into the Yam HaKinneret and wash there, you can wash in the ocean too. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the ocean is different, so he would say that you would be able to be washing in the Yam HaKinneret, but that's not matu you to wash in the ocean. Now, this doesn't seem to have anything to do with our sugya, and it's really very, very strange. Unless we're understanding it to mean that the physical characteristics in terms of the salt concentration and so on are different. And therefore, according to those who learn, Rabbi Yehuda, who learns that the ocean is different, so he would be saying its difference is expressed also in a higher ocean, a higher salt concentration. And because of that, we're assuming that if you go into it, you're going into it for refuah purposes. But as Tosa says, wow, that's quite a stretch. And indeed, Matkif Lo Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, I mean, what indeed this halacha has to do with the dinim of mikvos? Emor d'pligilina tumah v'tayra? The Indian Shabbos, Mishamatlu, I mean, I understand it's a gzerat hakatuv, right? What does that have to do with the question of it's being too salty to not be considered to be normal washing? Really, this doesn't make any sense at all. El Amr of Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Look, you've got two brises. One is matir washing and Shabbos in the Yam, on the Yam HaGadol. One is not. Obviously, the difference is hada ishtai v'hada lo ishtai. So if basically you're spending a long time there, so then it's, look, it's not that kind of comfortable washing up, spend a long time, unless you're swimming, obviously, but you're not swimming on Shabbos. So because of that, we would say it looks like if you're spending a long time there, it looks like you're in there in order to get some kind of refuah. That's why it becomes nicker that it's a shame refuah. Mashenka, you just go into the water to cool off, or you go into the water to wash off, that would be fine. So now, excuse me, now how are you understanding it? You're understanding that the second bride is talking about, that says your mutter, that you're not sitting in the water for long. You just went in and out. That doesn't work, because if that would be the din, that you just went in there for a minute, you're even allowed to do that in the worst water, even if it would be Mei Mishra, because it says Beferish in a Braita, and yet a third Braita, that you're allowed to go into Mei Tveria and into Mei Mishra and into Yam HaShel Sodom, which is not like we had in any of the previous Braita. And this would be true even though you are evidently in need of a cure. So even on the most exposed part of your body, there's sores on your head, and it's clear that you would want to be going into this salt water in order to cure your skin, you would be allowed to do it, which contradicts everything we just said. But the Braita explains itself. Bamed Devarim Amurim, where are you allowed to do this? If you just go into the water for a minute, so then it's clear that all you want to do is get dirt off or you want to cool off. But if you, that's lo nishtahe, but if you're nishtahe, if you would be sitting in there for a while, so then it would be clear nobody would go into this kind of water unless they want it for a refuah. So again, it's not making sense. Because if you want to tell me that you're allowed to go into the Yama Gadol in Braita number two, where you, to explain the Braita number two that allows you to go to the Yama Gadol, then why would Braita number two not agree with Braita number three, which says that you'd even be allowed to go into Mei Mishre? Yet it says that you can't. So there's got to be another difference. Ela Yama Gadol, Yama Gadol Okasha. Forget about the amount of time that you spend in there. The difference between Braita number one and Braita number two in terms of the Yama Hagadol is because, look, not all water is the same in the sea. I mean, very often the water is muddy or the water is polluted. It's, if it's near a port, I mean, imagine like some of these horrific going to these holy waters in India and so on, absolutely filthy water. So, I mean, the idea here would be, of course, it depends. If you're talking about going into the ocean, you got a nice, beautiful, you know, crystal clear water on the beach. Obviously, that's not there for medicinal purposes. Mashenkin, if you're going into somewhere filthy, that's what it's referring to. Abara Imshabo, we're over there. Indeed, if you just jumped in for a minute to cool off, that would be mutter. But so would be Mei Mishra would be mutter. So that's what we're talking about over there. So there we're saying if you went in there for a while, it would be clearly in order to effect some kind of cure. And then there would be no problem between the first two Braita and Braita number three, which was the contradiction between Mei Mishra and Mei Mishra and Ami Lokasha. And there we would answer, it depends. If you're sticking around, so Hadi Ishtahi, over there it would be usher because it's clearly for a cure, and harder lo ishtoi, and that indeed is the halacha. And now we are ready for our kapitan.
Talking about all the seas and everything, very appropriate.
Yes, yes, I know it's really tugging on your heart, I'm telling you.
The Red Sea would definitely be considered a good sea as well.
Yeah, really good sea out there. It's time to get yourself a sailboat in a lot. No need for Finland anymore. So we continue now with various inyanim of the medicine that we started on. And once we opened up this question about the inyanim of Maisa Bereishis and so on, there are nogea medications. We're going to talk about specific things, and then we're finally going to get to the thing that's Nogea, this week's parsha. But whew, that's really heavy-duty stuff, which most people do tomorrow, that has to do with snakes and all of the phallic elements of snakes that take us back to Gan Eden and the Mokar Ravra and the Nochash HaNechoshes that's coming up. But stay tuned for that tomorrow, I think we'll get to. And now let's go into our Mishnah with some simple cures. Ein ochlim ezov yavan. B'Shabbat, so you can't eat Ezov Yovan. So Ezov generally is called hyssop, and it turns out there's all different types of these Ezovs. The Pirush HaMishnah, according to Rav Kapach, understands Ezov Yovan in the Rambam as being what we call lavender. So, I mean, it really stretches far beyond the classic hyssop, and that is something that people don't eat normally. They eat it only if they need a cure. But you are allowed to eat Yoezer, and you are allowed to eat Abub Ro'eh. Note that these kind of things have the types of names that are very evocative. So Yoezer, of course, has to do with God's help. Abub Ro'eh has to do with the flute that you can see, which is really strange. And this is, again, I don't know exactly what these things are, but since they can be eaten by healthy people, they're not considered to be mukha milta de refuah. And the general rule is that kol ha'ochlin, anything that's viewed as a food, even for people who don't need a refuah, yeah, it might be a health food, but health food are eaten by people in general. So you're allowed to eat that even if it's for a specific refuah. And something that is called a mashkin, is a general kind of drink, you are allowed to drink as well, even though it's for refua, except chutz mimeidikalim, which we're going to talk about. In the Gemara, meidikalim is an extremely powerful laxative, and therefore nobody normal would drink that stuff. Even if he likes the drink, the payment is too high. And also a kos ikarin, now a kos ikarin we'll see caused sterility. And it could be used for other things, but sterility as a side effect of a medication is obviously not exactly the kind of thing that people would want to be drinking, as a matter of course. And the only thing that you would drink that for is because they're used for problems with the liver and a hepatitis, which might be worth the side effects. But clearly, if you're drinking that, it's for a refua. Avoshoteo me dekalim litzima. Oh, you're allowed to drink me dekalim if you are thirsty and you're not sick, says Rashi, which is a whole new take on things, because Rashi seems to hold this whole question halacha that if a sick person wants to take a drink which has nothing to do with his illness, but that thing that he's drinking is also a medication, then the very fact that he's sick is makes it into an iser because it's also a medication. That is a big machlokas haposkim. It's not so posh. V'sach shemen ikarim, you're going to allow to take that kosher ikarim and put it over your skin if the purpose is not for refuah, because for that, it's considered to be a reasonable usage. Man, if anybody could figure out what this koshal ikarin is, they would be making an absolute, fortune, because to be able to drink something that causes sterility would be a doctor's dream, you know, instead of going through all of these operations. I mentioned to you once that I once stopped at the side of the road in Kenya and spoke to one of these black guys, it was a Maasai, and I was asking them about Brit Milah, because they utilized Brit Milah as a test of adulthood. And I had heard about this. I wanted to hear about what tests you for adulthood is, that when you're 13 years old, so then you have to have a container of water on your head and stand up while they circumcise you. And if you flinch and the water falls, you are not allowed to reproduce. So you're not given a wife, okay? So okay, I mean, I can't imagine that many people are officially allowed to reproduce in the society. So like, I asked the guy, so like, what happens? None of these guys get married. So he says, no, but the girls come out to the field for us. So what do you do about pregnancy? I just thought, like, this is a long time ago. It's not a place where you're going to be able to avoid pregnancy. He says, the witch doctor makes up this potion and you drink it. He was talking about the females drinking it. But anyway, that prevents pregnancy. So they had this idea of kosher ikarin. So if you can get me some of this stuff, we can both retire. So I don't know. Apparently, there is still rumored kosher ikarin. No, Doc, it might be worth the trip out into the boondocks to get your retirement set up. Okay, anyway, Omer of Yosef. Azov, the regular Azov, is the Azov Bar Hamag. That's called Abarta Bar Hamag. And the Azov Yovan is a subspecies, which is the Abarta Bar Hinek. Now, Rashi says that, actually, as I learned from my rebbes, that the word hamag is based on the word gemi, and that it means it grows with reeds or guma. Mashenkin, the hinag grows among bushes, and that's called higi. Okay, maybe. Ula Amar, it's marva chivara. It's what we know today as marva chivara, which is a type of sage. Ula ikla lavera shmu bar Yehuda. And they had brought some marachivaria, and it's, oh my gosh, that is Azov. That's what the Torah is marcher is Azov. Rav Papi says Azov actually is shumshuk, and I can prove that because Omer of Yirmiyami Difte Kavati Rav Papi is very mistaber, because remember that in the Mishnah in Parah, it defines the mitzvah of Azov that you're supposed to have three of these branches of the azote, and each one of these branches has to have three seed pods on it. And the only one of the things that you talked about that has that is shumshuk. Shumshuk is mishtaka achi, that on each one of these branches, you've got these seed pods. Lamai achlile, what is the purpose of eating it that the Mishnah calls it to be a medication? It's good for kukiani. Kukiani are worms in the intestines. And what do you mix it with to eat? You certainly don't just chew on the plant. Bishva tamrei uchmata. You use seven black dates. And why would you get these worms, intestinal worms? Where do you get intestinal worms from? Well, it's from eating barley flour. If you will just chew on barley flour, which is 40 days after grinding, it's got all kinds of eggs from worms in it. They will get you in your intestines. But you are allowed to eat yo'ezer. And what is yo'ezer? Potnak. Well, potnak on the internet is supposedly pennyroyal. Lamai achlile. And what is that used for? That's used for liver fluke, arkita. And bimai achle, what would you mix that with? Shivatamri chivarata. You would use the pale dates. And what does that come from? That comes from eating raw meat on an empty stomach, and or maybe from eating very fatty meat on an empty stomach, but in this case, followed by water in both of these cases, all cases followed by water, or a really big steak, bibisu datura, on an empty stomach, or if you eat nuts on an empty stomach, or if you eat fenugreek branches on an empty stomach. All of the above cases are only problematic if you drink water right after. Drink alcohol, you know, have a good breakfast. The ilo, now, if it doesn't help you, or you don't have any of this, what you can do is leave tachle chavarta. You can swallow white cress. Now, cress, garden cress is very popular. I don't know of a white type of garden cress. Maybe it's like a yellowish one. The ilo, now, if that doesn't work, and you've still got these worms, leitev betanita, so you should fast, and then bring this real fatty meat, and put it on top of these burning coals, and limits garma, then you should be taking a bone that's like really juicy, suck on that bone, and then drink raw vinegar. Some say, no, vinegar, that's going to kill you. Mishum dekashi lekav, that's really going to harm your liver. And if that doesn't work, you could start using magic. So go to a bush, and light a gourda de asinta, bring the bark off of that bush, but make sure that you peel the bark going downwards, and not from the bottom of the bush upwards, because if you would use the bark that went upwards, you would be causing those worms to come up through your mouth, and you want them to go down to the other side. And then you should boil up that bark right during Bein HaShemashos, boil it in beer. And the next day, you should niskrino nekavim didei velishtei. Now, to question what this means, whether it means we should make sure that you don't get any smell from it before you drink it, or whether it means you should have your body orifices stuffed up so that way it keeps the power of the thing in your body. Drink this, and then when you finally go to relieve yourself, make sure that you relieve yourself onto that actual bush that you had take the bark from. And the Mishnah continues on Shotina, but remember, we mentioned before about all of these things, you're not even allowed. There's according to the Marshal, there's an actual cherem on anybody who tries out any of these ideas, because they don't work, and they are a misunderstanding and misapplication of inyanim from the Rabbanan, and they made an early cherem on it because it would cause people to like go wild over the stupidities of the Gemara and so on. You can drink abuv ro'eh. What is abuv ro'eh? It's a chum teraya. And what the heck is a chum teraya? A chum teraya is a abuv. In other words, it's a chutra yechida. It's like a piece of wood that you can use for mountain climbing. And it grows without branches. It's like just straight. And what do you do that for? What would it be used for? Well, if you drank water that had been left open, that might have been poisoned by a snake or something. And if you don't have that, then you did drink this water. What you can do is you can bring five roses and mix them with five cups of beer, and then boil the whole thing together. until it's boiled down to such a concentration that you're left with one revia salug, an anpak, and that you should drink. And actually, Ravach Tavoy Bar Ami's mommy, I saw a guy that had a drink of water that had been left overnight, and she made him just one rose with one cup of beer, and she boiled it up, and she made him drink it, and then she lit her oven and heated it up, and then she took out all of the coals, and it was still very, very hot, though, so she put down a big brick on the bottom, had the guy sit on the brick, and then he vomited out this stuff, and it came out of him like a hutzayark. It was like a green leaf of a palm. Rav Avi Amar, you should drink a revius of milk that comes from a white goat. Rav Huna Bar Yehuda says, take a really sweet esrog, make a little hole in it, fill up the hole with honey, then put the esrog on the coals that you had for a barbecue, and then you eat that. Rav Hanina says you take 40-day-old urine. Remember, we spoke about that as being the standard in those times. Barzina, you drink one barzina of it. A barzina is a tiny, it's an eighth of a revius. It's a tiny little bit. And you drink that for a ziburas. So if you were stung by a wasp, you drink a full revius of it. If you were stung by a scorpion, you drink a half of a lug if you drank water that had been left uncovered, and you drink an entire lug, even if you were affected by witchcraft, that would be enough to be mevatel, even kshafim. And Omer Rabbi Yochanan says that, here, by the way, the riva is the riva of a kav, rather than a riva of the lug. So one is the revius, and one is the half of a lug, quarter of a kav. And Haiman de Bolachivia, I skipped, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Anigron, remember we spoke about Anigron back in Brochas, and Anigron, that's water, which these beets you boiled into, or spinach, avangari, were boiled into, if you know what that is, I don't. And the teriyaka, Rashi says, might be balsam. Malu ben legiluya ben lekshafim, that's good. Even if you drank water, you were affected by kishafim. Haiman de Bolachivya, somebody who swallowed a live snake. Luch lekishuta b'milcha, you should give him, again, kishuta, whatever it is, translated usually as hops, mix that with salt, and run for at least 3 mil. And we know that that was effective. Reb Shimi Bar Ashi saw a guy like that, and he had swallowed up this a snake. And so he dressed up like a dangerous guy, a parasha, like one of the knights that was going around with swords. And he forced him to eat kushuta b'milcha, forced him to run for 3 mil in front of him. And the nafak mine gubi gubi, the snake finally evacuated that snake in little pieces. The guy was terrified, and that killed the snake. Ikeni Amri Reb Shimi Bar Ashi himself had been Bolachivya by accident, and Elio Anovi came, and Elio appeared to him, to Reb Shimi Bar Ashi, as if he was this dangerous policeman. Ochle Kishuta B'milcha, Haratek HaMeitlat HaMilei, and Nofek Minei from Reb Shimi Bar Ashi. Gubi Gubi. A guy who was bitten by a snake. Huh? Now, the thing to do for that is bring an embryo that comes from a white donkey. Those are easily available at your neighborhood drugstore, and tear that open and put it on the bite, okay? However, there's a bit of a caveat here. That's only if the mother of this embryo was not a trefa. It turns out that the mother, the chamor, was a trefa. It's not gonna work. And there was this guy that actually this happened to, Bar Kasha, this was this police officer in Pumbedisa, who was a Jewish guy, who was bitten by a snake. And they went all over town. Now, there were only 13 of these white donkeys in the entire Pumbedita. They tore every single one of them, put it on his bite. It turned out that every single one, all 13, were found to be trefas. And they had heard that there was another white donkey, but it was on the other side of town, and they sent an ambulance out to the other side of town as an emergency to bring that, but by the time they got there, it was eaten by a lion. So obviously this guy was not destined to be cured, and he actually died. And Abaya said, boy, this couldn't have been a normal snake that bit this guy. This must have been a rabbi's snake. So Dilma Chivya de Rabbanan Tarke must have been a big Talmud Chacham snake, because what that means is that if the Rabbanan, they give a klola to someone, purates getter, yishchenu nachash, there's not any cure for that kind of snake. And that letle asuta, there's no cure for, and it's because it says purates getter, yishchenu nachash. And there was a person that was there who heard Abaya say this. He said, yes, Rebbe, that's exactly the truth. This guy was no good, Nick. And we know why this crazy story happened to him, because when Rav was nifter, Rav Yitzchak Bar Bizna said that that year they have to be machmir on themselves to be in a state of avelas for the loss of Rav, and it was usur for that year. The leket almati asma asma gidme lebe elula. You should not bring hadasim, or they used to bring palm branches to weddings, and they would play. They would like do all kinds of dances with bells. And that would be together with a tabla. And this guy, he went, he made a big wedding. And this guy, he went ahead and he brought in tons of adasim, and he brought in the gidme, and he had the orchestra there with the tabla. And that's when he was bit by that snake. Tarke chivya umit, and indeed there was nothing to do for that. That's serious. Okay, tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, we'll get into the really scary stuff with snakes. All perfectly prepared for the Nachash HaNechoshes and the other Nechashim that went around chasing everybody and biting them in the Midbar, which were also, I guess, sort of Nechashim Darabonan, right? So they wouldn't have much to do for, unless you got yourself a Nachash HaNechoshes handy. But we'll be talking about that tomorrow. Mirat Hashem, have a wonderful Rosh Chodesh and a wonderful month, Tammuz, of Geula and Besorot Tovot. Kol Tov, Chodesh Tov, Umevorach.